Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 170 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. This week's episode is sponsored by Movement Watches. The holiday shopping season is here. With Movement, you can skip the crowds and standing in crazy lines at the mall and find a gift they'll love at prices that beat the department stores.
Movement Watches start at just $95. At a department store, you're looking at $400 to $500.
Movement figured out that by selling online, they were able to cut out the middleman and retail markup, providing the best possible price.
Classic design, quality construction, and styled minimalism. Over 500,000 watches sold in over 160 countries.
Get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to movementwatches.com/Outlander.
Seriously, I've been getting compliments ever since I put it on.
Now is the time to step up your watch game, people.
Go to mvmtwatches.com/Outlander.
Join the movement. So announcements this week. I don't think we've got any new casting or actual show Stars related announcements. However, we have an announcement that's very near and dear to our hearts here at the Outlander podcast. Ginger, would you like to do the honors?
Well, okay. I mean, I can. Basically, and there's actually some humor or funniness. There's some funny along with this. So Outlander Pod hit 1 million. Yes, you heard that right. 1,000,000
downloads.
Downloads. Here's the thing. And okay, first of all, the number, woohoo! I mean, that's awesome. That's awesome. But the number is guaranteed higher than that as far as listens. The way we know that is that our audio host tracks basically every time someone accesses the file, correct? Whether it's through our website when we give you an embedded link, whether it's through iTunes, we believe, whether it's through any of the other places or your favorite podcast listener, a podcatcher, they're called. However, one, and there may be more than this, but one that we know from experience only counts as one download, and we could have, 10 listeners or 1,000 listeners through something like Stitcher. Now, Stitcher, what they do is we have to apply to be with them and everything and, be signed up through them. And then they, when our new episode is ready, they grab our MP3. And then what they do is they compress it even more. They do something to their system so that the version that you hear on Stitcher, if you listen through Stitcher or you subscribe through Stitcher, it's the same content. I believe they put their own ads in. I could be wrong, but I believe they do. But as far as the quality, it's even, I believe, more compressed. So when you get it through them, they're delivering their audio. So Stitcher only pulls it once. So one of those listens for each episode is Stitcher, if I understand correctly. But I'm pretty sure there's more than one listener on Stitcher. And if 10,000 people listen to an episode through Stitcher, that's 9,999 hits that we're not going to get. So that's what I mean when I say we have a million, and I'm not saying it's like 2 million or anything. It's not double, and nowhere near that. But it's significantly more because we can't track the numbers through Stitcher, or I should say we haven't. So if that data is available through Stitcher, then shame on us. But we've dropped the ball. Well, not dropped the ball, but we have pretty decent stats through our audio host. And so, we don't want to go through, five different, I'm being a little facetious, but we don't want to go through like five different places to get the numbers. So, but the funny thing is that Summer is the one who typically goes in and just kind of keeps light track. We don't have any spreadsheets or anything, but she'll look at them and say, oh, that's interesting. This one jumped, or, oh, there's a jump here. I wonder what is, oh, this episode, by the way, I think our top episode still is the wedding from the book, not even from the show. Right?
Yeah.
From the book. That's
episode. No. It's from the show.
Oh, sorry. From the show. Of course. Is that? Yeah. Okay. That makes me want to go listen to it again. So anyway, Summer's the one who usually takes a peek at things. And so she's been saying, like, over the past few weeks, oh my gosh, we're like 30,000 away. Oh my gosh, we're like 20,000 away because our stats.
It's true. But what I was saying to you was, hey, we should do something for our millionth download. It's coming, but we're still like 38,000 away. So I thought we had lots of time.
Well, yeah, but you were saying like 20 or 30 and then 20. And then I think you even told me 10.
But I severely misjudged how quickly our numbers are rising these days.
Because as you have more episodes. Yes. As you have more episodes, as your back catalog increases, yes, you know, hopefully if you're more popular, your newest episodes will hopefully have a hit and, you know, take off as well. They do. I think it depends on the topic, but they typically do. However, your overall number, as far as overall number of listens or downloads or whatever you want to call it, are going to grow exponentially compared if you're brand new and you're just starting out and you have, you know, maybe 10 episodes or something like that. And so Summer has been telling me, oh, Ginger, we're getting closer. Oh my gosh, Ginger. And she was saying, you know, we should do a giveaway. We should do this. We should do that. And I was the one, I think on accident, was it Monday or Tuesday? It was two nights ago, right? I think it was Monday night. I had to log in because, I had to edit the audio. Remember, I had to remove some like funky background noise. And when I went to replace the audio on episode 169, I looked over and it said 1M. I was like, what? And so I just sounded like a chihuahua, didn't I?
It sounded like something.
I was like, what? And so I tweeted about it and I told Summer and I was like, Summer, holy crap. And then she's like, she didn't say this, but she's like, basically smack my damn head. She's like, how did I miss?
I would never ever say that.
That's true. But anyway, she couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. She had missed it because she's the one who was like trying to keep us up on this.
Well, like I said, I mean, my expectation was not that we would hit it that quickly. Like I've kind of set back to let the numbers just kind of move on their own. And I check in on them bi-weekly and I was not there yet. So,
but that one, when I logged in to update the audio, I think they were already 8,000 something. I could be wrong, but I think they were already about 8,000 or whatever. Just under 10,000. And I was shocked. I was like, wait, this just went up like day ago, 2 days. I was like, that's huge. What's different? I mean, I don't go in and check the numbers like 2 days after every episode I upload, and it's quite rare. Not because I'm that good or we're that good. I guess it's luck. But it's quite rare that I've had to go back and re-edit something because there's a funky sound. But I had to. And if you do that, you have to replace the audio like in the back office. You can't delete it or the whole post goes down and you lose all your counts and all that. Or maybe not toward your whole stats, but for that episode, you no longer, it's gone. So you have to go in through a certain way and replace the audio rather than remove it. And I was doing that and I saw the number and I was like, what? Anyway, sorry, regarding the number for that episode, 169, the only thing I can think of was like, we were a few days late, so maybe people were like, finally. The only thing I can think of with a number that jumped that high, and I don't mean the million, I mean for the last episode, was that it's so controversial, the whole thing about Geneva. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I can think of. Like, what made... I don't go in and check all the episodes 2 days later to see what the count is. Don't get me wrong. So this could be a pattern. I don't know. Maybe I should be better on the stats like that than that. But I was like, dang it. You guys are hot to trot for that. So I don't know if it was normal or if it was the Geneva factor.
Or it could have been Candida.
The Candida factor. Mm-hmm. She shared it with all of her homies. Yes.
Okay.
All three of them. I'm just kidding.
All right, then.
Don't you just love our theme?
Why are you talking over it? You're ruining it for everyone.
No, just for funsies. This is the first time we've played it this way.
All right, now on to our read-along. This week, we are discussing chapter 15, entitled By Misadventure. And thank you again, Diana, for giving me a chapter title that I can read.
So the chapter, or we are at Hellwater, and it is January 1758. The chapter begins as Diana lets us know there's some kind of news. What news? We don't know yet. But the weather was appropriately, quote, dark and stormy, unquote. Eileen P. writes, the terrible stormy weather with its deluge of rain is foreboding. It is an omen of things to come. You know what they say, when it rains, it pours. Lisa T. writes, the chapter opens with hellish, frigid, stormy weather. Unlike the end of the last chapter where Jamie is ice cold, here, despite the weather, he is, quote, reclined in a comfortable hay-lined nest, an open book propped on his chest, unquote. And yes, Lisa T. is right. Jamie is reading a naughty book. And what is great about it is that we see Jamie's reaction. It's like Diana is live tweeting Jamie's reading. At, quote, an object of terror and delight, unquote, Jamie looks down at his own crotch and snorts.
For real, though, like, I was listening to this.
I couldn't imagine it even better with Davina.
Well, what's so funny is that the voice that she takes on to read the excerpt from the book was, like, really awkward for me. It was like, and then I was doing this, and I have a British accent, and I was just like, I could read this all day long and not feel bad about it, but for whatever reason, the voice she chose to read this passage with was really uncomfortable for me. I was like, this is so awkward. I'm not enjoying this. And I was in my car with the windows rolled up, but I was like, people are looking at me. They know what I'm listening to.
They do. It's written on the outside of your car. I'm just kidding.
Exactly.
There's like, one day there may be like, I don't know, like radio stations where you have those little thingies or something where it says now playing on the outside of your car. Amy D. writes, I have to chuckle at the image of our Jamie reading erotic scenes from a book. Strong, stubborn, and willful as he is, the thought of him reading romantic stories with sex is quite the contradiction. He was so amused by it, even going so far as to say, quote, he had been aware that books like this existed, of course, but with Jenny ordering the reading matter at Lallybroch, had not encountered one personally before. And then, after the passage describing the most vital member looking down at his own crotch and snorting, I can't help but think, though, that regardless of how amused he was at finally being able to read a romantic story with erotic passages, how it must have exacerbated his loneliness, how it must have reminded him of how it felt to have that kind of intimate connection with someone he loved, and how it must have brought back the depth of grief he feels when he allows himself to truly miss Claire. So what was initially, for me anyway, an amusing, entertaining passage became something poignant and heartbreaking as I considered the depth of Jamie's longing for the woman he believes is lost to him forever. Lisa T. writes, he is roused, in parentheses, aroused, from his reading and his net.
I'm sorry, you said nest, and I'm just thinking about that passage where they were talking about the dark, his ivory thrusting from his thatch of blackness. Like, it was like,
it was details. Like, dang, for the 18th century, like, dang.
It was, and maybe I'm just used to coarser language, but when they're trying to make it flowery, it made it really uncomfortable for me.
Makes it worse.
Like, especially
you add Davina.
Whoa. I know, but I feel like if they just been like, his cock was huge and angry.
Lord.
and angry looking. I don't know. I feel like it would not have been as hard for me to read as talking about his ivory whatever from the black thatch of nonsense.
Deborah C. writes, it opens with Jamie reading and enjoying Fanny Hill by John Cleland, 1748-49, and quotes from part three, quote, its prodigious size made me shrink again, unquote. And she says she first read Fanny Hill when she was a senior in high school. It truly is one of the first and most fun of the raunchy romance genre. But the best part is that it shows a parallel with Claire's discovery and enjoyment of similar novels in The Doctor's Lounge. Unfortunately, we aren't told this until chapter 18. I don't think that's a big spoiler, so that's all good. Eileen P. writes, Jamie hiding his book under the straw is like a guy hiding his Playboy magazine under the mattress. There you go. And Erica H. writes, it's funny to me that Jamie is reading a romance novel. I hope it's happening at the same time Claire starts reading them. That would be funny.
Well, and I think that he's not going out of his way to read romance novels. It's what's available. And yes, he's trying to pass the time. It's raining. He can't go anywhere. He can't do his job. He has nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Right. And all he can do is read the books that are provided to him by, what was it, the proctor or whatever the dude's name was, a factor, whoever the guy was, yes, whatever the job title was that the guy that was providing him books. But I mean, he has a very limited selection of novels to choose from. So he's just like, I guess I'll read this. So, I mean, he was rolling his eyes clearly at this. This is not his go-to genre, but it's better than being bored.
And Jamie is then called to help get the coach ready to drive Lord Dunsany and Lady Isabel to Ellesmere. Lisa T writes, now, are you daft, man, or just drunk? He glanced at the open half door behind Hughes, which seemed a solid sheet of streaming water. Even as he looked, the sky beyond lit up with sudden flare of lightning that threw the mountain beyond into sudden sharp relief. It was a hellish journey. Again, the reference to hell. Lisa's good. Lisa's like keeping tallies. Geneva, we find out, is giving birth, or at least that's what they're rushing to Ellesmere for. There's a terrible storm out, so the fact that they're riding out in it can only mean that something was imminently wrong or dangerous about her giving birth. And Jamie knows the child might be his. Quote, hearing through the servants' gossip that Lady Geneva was due to be delivered in January, he had counted quickly backward, cursed Geneva Dunsany once more, and then said a hasty prayer for her safe delivery, unquote.
I would like to say that they know something's wrong. They know, or they wouldn't be going, because
that's what I just said, that, yeah.
I know, because we see, and it'll come up later, that when they do arrive, she's already gone. Like, yeah. And that's what they're like, oh no, she died yesterday or whatever. You know, the baby's fine. Oh, so
the messenger it took them like 4 hours or something like that to get there. And then that means it must've taken some rider, cause they don't have a telephone, some rider, a number of hours to get to them in the same weather, right? Mm-hmm. To let them know. So that was 4 hours earlier. We don't even know what time this is, but you're talking potentially 7 to 8 hours that has passed since the original writer left Ellesmere. And by that time it was bad news. She may not have been gone, but the bleeding had started or something like that.
Right.
Cause it had to be something like you said, to send them out. And we see Jamie is concerned. Now after Isabel asks, and they're on the way now, after Isabel asks how much longer it will be until they get there, quote, the snake of anxiety wrapped round his heart slithered lower to twist in his guts, unquote. So Jamie knows, as Summer said, Jamie knows it's about Geneva. He knows it's about the birthing process. He knows it's likely it's either about Geneva or the baby or both.
And he's already almost killed one woman by making her pregnant.
Yeah, he's got he's got baggage. So after they get there, Lord and Isabel Dunsany rush inside, and it takes Jamie about an hour more to prep the team for the stable. He and Jeffries enjoy a meal and a drink. The kitchen maid fills them in that indeed the baby had been born the night before. That's all they hear. The cook, however, continues slightly later on. When Geneva had begun to show, Ellesmere shouted. He was angry with her. There was crying, stamping up and down, slamming doors. He called her names, etc. Now, this in stark
contrast.
Thank you for the word. In stark contrast. I'm like, in stark difference. No. Contrast to how he had been when they first got married. She could do no wrong. He was waiting on her every whim, you know, everything. And then when she started to show, he's like, oh, wait a second. That ain't my baby. And so now there was all that he was calling your names. Ellesmere started to say that the child wasn't his. And, there's talk about him being incapable and also that the sheets of the wedding bed were white.
Now, here's my question. Mm-hmm. Do you think that he never had sex with Geneva? Or do you think that he knows that he has prior knowledge to being sterile? Cause it could be either one of those things.
I didn't get the hint that it was about sterility. I got the hint that it was about can't get it uppity.
Because when you say incapable, it could mean incapable of getting it up. Yes. Or it could be incapable of procreating.
Of fathering a child.
Right.
Yes. I thought it was more, that's how I took it. Because it's about, and she didn't say yes, but she's like, you're not hearing it from me. It was implied because of age. And typically sterility, or I should say, what's the opposite of sterility? Virility, it can decline with age, but it's not
so much.
No, that's what I'm saying. So it's more the performance value goes down with age rather than the fact that you can no longer sire children. The child they find out, though. Oh, but to answer your question, Okay. I think that the maid was referring to his get it up ability, but
or get it up ability. Hashtag get it up ability.
Or, I mean, and I think that I don't think that they had slept together. Because the reason I think is because it's never in the dialogue that we have, and Diana never comes out and says it, you know, straight out. I think that if they had done it and there was even a chance, he wouldn't have reacted that way.
Well, the only way that he would not have been surprised at or been tipped off that something was up after the wedding night when the sheets were white as snow is if they hadn't actually had sex, right?
No, that too. But the first night, a lot of things don't happen the first night.
I don't know who you're bedding down with.
I'm just saying, in the olden days.
An old dude. But the thing is, had they done the deed the first night, there would have been, and there was no evidence of Maidenhead on the sheets.
Then he wouldn't have spent 3 months trying to, like,
doting on her.
Exactly.
Doting on her. Yeah. So I'm saying that odds are,
I don't think they did it.
Right. I'm with you.
Okay. So the child, however, lived, and it was a boy. And the nurse, I'm just adding people to this book.
Like the nurse from Romeo and Juliet?
I don't know. Maybe. The cook kind of, because Damie's like, yeah, just tell us, darn it. And the cook's like, oh, I thought you knew already. It's the mother that's dead.
Yeah. I was like, she's
like, what? He was, of course, in shock, Jamie was, and he asks when, and he finds out it was that morning before noon. Now, she didn't die like as she gave birth or right after she gave birth. She was sitting up, holding the baby, laughing. You get this picture of her holding baby and being happy and everything. And then she began to bleed around dawn. Now, the doctor was called back, but he wasn't there in time. Joe B. writes, I like the inclusion of the scene of seeing Geneva with the baby. She loved her child for all her recklessness and manipulation. I also wonder if it is some further evidence of her deeper feelings for Jamie, as she must know he is the father. Now, Joe was the only one to mention it, Joe B., but I agree. Having this one image of Geneva holding her son is obviously, it's bittersweet. It's sad, but it's... Well.
I'm
I'm so thankful that we have it, and I never thought about it that way, but I do hope they keep that. Again, this could be a fade to black, like she goes off to marry, and then, I mean, they got to show the part with the guns. They have to show him Ellesmere being killed or whatever, you know, and the danger to the baby, but they don't necessarily have to show Geneva. My guess is because they have like a decently well-known up-and-coming British-American actress playing Geneva. But Geneva's like a one-shot wonder. Sorry, a one-hit wonder.
Like, she's like two episodes tops. Huh? What? She's like two episodes tops.
I mean, I'm thinking there's going to be one episode called Geneva. Just like there was one episode called Faith. I'm thinking it's going to happen, and it's going to be big, and it's going to be boom. And I think it's going to be like he gets to Hellwater, he meets her, and then like 10, 20 minutes later, they do it. And then 2 days, you know, 2 days later. Yeah. Cause the episode is that long, but then in the show 2 days later or whatever it was, she goes off to her marriage, and then fast forward. I honestly think it will be one episode because
two tops.
Oh, top. Well,
I'm allowing for the possibility of bridging two episodes.
You're allowing for bleed. I can appreciate that.
There'll be plenty of bleeding and not enough.
Jamie is called into the house by Lord Dunsany, and Jeffreys is told to bring his pistols and his pestle and his mortar. What? While Jeffreys is prepping his pistols, Jamie loses patience, demands the maid take him into the study. Before he enters, he's kind of standing outside. Before he enters, he hears Dunsany yelling, "How dare someone can be making such accusations against his daughter before she's even cold? Quote, I will not suffer the child to stay a single night under your roof, unquote. So his intent is to take the infant with him and leave. Ellesmere, however, isn't going to lose his heir. Quote, the little bastard stays here. Bastard that he is, he's my heir, and he stays with me. She's bought and paid for, and if his dam was a whore, at least she gave me a boy. Unquote. The argument, of course, is whether or not Geneva was a virgin upon their marriage. Dunsany tries to give Ellesmere an out by blaming his words on his drink, and again says he'll take his grandson. Ellesmere goes even further. Quote, you seemed damn sure of your daughter's purity. Sure the brat isn't yours? What? Was he talking about incestual?
Yeah.
Oh, law. Okay. Then there was a cry of astonishment and a crash. Jamie did not wait any longer. He entered the room and saw Elsmere and Dunsany entangled on the hearthrug. He reached into the tangle and grabbed his employer. Elsmere is about to pull the bell rope that would call his servants, and Jamie stops him and said he thinks it unwise to involve them. Jeffreys finally enters with the guns. Jamie tries to get Dunsany to leave. Lady Dunsany comes into the room at, of course, perfect timing, carrying the infant. Elsmere springs up and snatches the baby from her. He flung back the draperies and opened the window. He orders them all to leave his house or he'll drop the baby out the window.
Oh, no, he didn't.
Can you imagine? Here's what Diana writes. Quote, past all conscious thought or any fear of consequence, Jamie Fraser acted on the instinct that had seen him through a dozen battles. He snatched one pistol from the transfixed Jeffreys, turned on his heel, and fired in the same motion. Unquote. He had grabbed the baby and noted that there was a hole in his wrappings where the pistol ball had passed through it. Holy monkey balls.
One more example of how Jamie Fraser is better than you.
You, me, or you, the world?
You, the world.
Okay, I'm like, well, me too, but especially the world. Okay, Eileen P. writes, it's interesting that Jamie had to take charge when Geneva blackmailed him into taking her maidenhead. She just lay there. Now, at Elsmere, he wonders why he has to take charge during this messy situation. It's as if he has nothing to do with it, when actually he has everything to do with it. It was his mess. Quote, he stood...
Sticky. His mess.
So it was actually
clean it up, Jamie.
It was Geneva's mess, but Jamie caused it. You're right. Quote, he stood, eyes tight closed, shaking like a leaf, unable either to move or to think, arms wrapped tight about the shapeless, squirming, squawking bundle that contained his son. Unquote. Lisa T. writes, this is such a beautiful and heartbreaking moment for Jamie. That was, oh, gorgeous, beautiful, sad, tragic line from Davina, from Diana. Although Davina reads it beautifully. So that's the scene in that room. So what happens is they're fighting about Geneva's purity or whatever, right? And of course, the parentage, the father, sireage, whatever, the daddyhood of the baby.
What, you're not going to call him the bebe? This is the one time you're not going to say bebe?
So Jamie is, they're called because of this ruckus. They're called in and Jeffrey brings his guns like almost too late. Jamie's waiting. He's like, can't do this anymore. He barges in. He saves his employer or does what he can. He takes his employer out of this ruckus, out of this struggle. Right then, in comes Lady Dunsany with the baby. And okay, more verbal, you know, more fighting, whatever. And then Elsmere goes, snatches the baby and threatens to basically, not even basically, straight up, legit, drop the baby out the window if they don't leave. And he is very believable. And you have to believe someone like that because you know what? You're going to lose a baby's life. So Jamie grabs one of the guns, shoots him, thankfully, mostly, well, missing the baby's body, but mostly missing the baby itself. And as Elsmere fall, or in the same move, that same motion that he shoots him, he then goes over and grabs the baby. And he's sitting there or standing there holding this baby in this bundle that is his son, contains his son, as Diana wrote. So fast forward, like it could be a day, it could be a week. Do we know how many days it was later? They end up returning with the baby to Hellwater. So that's kind of the fast forward that is implied in this thing. So Jamie's back doing, or Alexander is back in the stables, and the family minus Geneva is back at Hellwater.
It was at least a day because she says that the coroner's court met this morning.
Mm. It could have been a day. It could have been a week. Who knows? And, but yeah, right. it was soon.
Right. And he says he had known that. They all had. And the other grooms had kept their distance from him all morning.
Okay. Oh, and it could have been the morning because that's the day that the court met. Who knows? But okay. So Lady Dunsany comes at some point very soon after these events, comes to the stable to speak with Jamie. She tells him that the coroner's court met that very morning and that the verdict was that Elsmere met his death by misadventure, that he was distraught over Geneva's death. So is that code word for suicide? Or he was just like so far into his cups that he got into trouble somehow?
I don't know. Let me Google that. Misadventure.
No, Google death by misadventure.
Death by misadventure. This is according to Wikipedia.com. A death by misadventure, as recorded by coroners and on death certificates and associated documents, is one that is primarily attributed to an accident which occurred due to a dangerous risk which was taken voluntarily. In contrast, when a cause of death is listed as an accident rather than a misadventure, this implies no reasonable willful risk. Misadventure is a legally defined manner of death, a way by which an actual cause of death, trauma, exposure, etc., was allowed to occur. For example, a death caused by an illicit drug overdose may be ruled as a death by misadventure, as the user ignored the risks of the drugs. Misadventure is a form of unnatural death like accident, suicide, or homicide.
So it is a legitimate cause of death, but it's by some kind of like feat or some kind of like you fell off a cliff or you know what I mean?
Or suicide was also part of it. Unnatural death like accident, suicide, or homicide. So it could be homicide too, meaning like if he
big bad things.
Right.
That's wow. I wonder, is it still used now? Is it outdated or is that actually still used now? That I cannot imagine a coroner writing that on a death certificate nowadays. Death by misadventure.
Well, the reference for this is a book called Handbook of Death and Dying, 2003. But it's still used. It's still used because in 1980, the coroners in London, or is it Westminster? That was who died in London. So the death certificate of Bon Scott, the singer of the rock band AC/DC, who died in London after a night of heavy alcohol consumption. So they still use it, at least in the UK, they still use
it. Okay, that's true. Maybe it's not an American thing. If we have any coroners or morticians or anyone in law who knows these things, let us know, because I do find that fascinating. It seems to be a current thing, at least a British, used in British legal term. I'm wondering if it's the same here in the States. I'm pretty sure if it was over in Britain, it probably was here in the States at one time. But maybe not any longer. That would be curious to find out. So the coroner's court reported decided that the verdict was that Ellesmere met his death by misadventure and that he was distraught over Geneva's death. Jeffries had given evidence. Jamie had not. As far as the court was concerned, he had not set foot on Ellesmere, on the property. She said that they were grateful to him and she asks him if he wants to go home. We find out that the new baby is, quote, the possessor of one of the largest fortunes, unquote, in England. We learn that Lord John's family is not of, quote, no consequence, unquote, and that they have connections and influence. Lady Dunsany proposes that it might be possible to exert sufficient influence on Jamie's behalf to have him released from the conditions of his parole so he could return to Scotland, but to go home and away from his child, to never see him again. He had finally had a peek at the baby and was thankful the child didn't have red hair. Now, this to me tells me it was more than a day between the death and the coroner's court. The coroner's court was this morning. The morning that we're talking about right now. But between the death and then returning to Hellwater, mm-hmm. and the coroner's court, I mean, I don't think he could have done all that in 24 hours.
Well, then he kept saying he kept trying to catch a glimpse of the baby. And I don't know how long.
That's even more time.
He finally got a glimpse.
Exactly.
A glimpse.
Maybe that's... Because Jamie doesn't get a limps because he has the I can get it up ability.
He does.
Okay. So, okay. Lisa T. I wrote Leah T. Hi, Leah. I'm renaming you. Lisa T. writes, this is even more heartbreaking because he never saw baby Faith and he will never see Brianna. This is the first child of his that he has held. He needs to protect and love this baby. His need to protect and love this baby outweighs everything else. And so he chooses to stay. He gives up his home to stay. He says thank you, but he's not quite ready to go. And thankfully, it's an open offer. And she says he only has to say the word. Lady Dunsany, quote, turned like a tiny clockwork figure and left, going back to the world of Hellwater, 1,000 times more his prison now than it ever had been. Unquote. Deborah C. writes, after the coroner's inquiry into the Earl of Ellesmere's death, Lady Dunsany goes to Jamie and tells him that he was not implicated. The way she looks directly at him, the fact that he wasn't implicated, and her offer to give him his freedom made me wonder if she knew Jamie was the father. Did Geneva tell her mother? Summer, what do you think? Interesting question.
Whether or not she knew?
Whether Geneva told her mom.
I don't know.
If she told anyone, she told her mom. I don't think she told her daddy. I think she would have told her mom, if anyone.
When, though? While she was pregnant? Because not at the end. Well, they weren't there when she died.
Probably not at the end. But no, I mean, it would have been, yeah. I mean, I'm sure her mom visited her. Or they wrote letters. I think the letter, that would be too dangerous. But who knows? Eileen P. writes, Jamie's new prison, staying in Hellwater to be near a son who will never know Jamie is his father, watching another family raise his son. It's heartbreaking that Jamie lost his daughter, Faith, and then Claire while she was pregnant with his child, then his family, then his men from Ellesmere. To be near his son in this situation is bittersweet. Erica H. writes, why was Jamie not involved in the coroner's court? Surely Ellesmere's servants would mention him. What do you think, Sam? It sounds like...
She made it pretty clear that he, as far as everyone was concerned, he wasn't there. So if it was a servant's word against them, I don't...
Yeah. But I'm saying I can see the Dunsanys having control over who of their servants would be there to report, like Jeffries, right? But, I mean... Ellesmere was dead, so the only like high sitting family who was involved in the whole skirmish that was even left was the Dunsanys. So there was no one else to look to, and the heir of the guy who died was like not even a day old. So they couldn't, obviously, there was no one except for the Dunsanys to report, because they were, you know, titled, landed, whatever.
Well, it's true, but none of his staff was in the room when it happened.
Oh, you're right. It was, oh Lordy. See, there you go.
Yeah. Anyway, none of them were there. All that was there was Jeffries, Mackenzie, and the Dunsanys, and Ellesmere, and the
baby. You're right. There's nobody else.
Jeffries went to the coroner's court.
Yes.
And he gave his testimony, but Mackenzie didn't. So as far as the coroner's court was concerned, and that is per Diana's writing directly, as far as the coroner's court was concerned, Mackenzie was not at Ellesmere at all. He never set foot there.
Also, Erica writes, John's stepfather is General Stanley. It seems to be fictional, but at least acquainted with Walpole, who is prime minister at this time. So not precisely, quote, of no consequence. Joe B. writes, Jamie is literally left holding the baby, his baby, as Ellesmere proves to be the depraved monster Geneva called him, as he once again is the one to assess and take action when others are inactive. In killing Ellesmere, he not only protects the child, but the Dunsany family. The British justice system of this time is so interesting. The Dunsanys, by their status, are able to exert influence enough to allow a magistrate to agree to publishing the verdict of misadventure. Lady Dunsany knows no one believes it, but the story can't be contradicted. The protection of the child and his estate and future is more important than truly discovering what really happened. They're also able to keep Jamie away from the inquest by just not mentioning it to the magistrate. They are avoiding scandal for themselves, even as they protect Jamie. Lady Dunsany comes to the stables to offer reward and or payment for a debt. She knows Jamie is, quote, one of John's Jacobite prisoners, unquote, and that Mackenzie is not his real name. She offers the influence of the Grey family in procuring a pardon so Jamie can go home. Now, he is torn. Going home means he can be himself again, but having his new son so close by and a sense of having something to care about is enough to make him take a rain check. Hellwater is now a prison of his own making. Martina P. writes, I was surprised when Lady Dunsany approached Jamie in the stables after their return to Hellwater to offer him his freedom. Was she just trying to reward him for his bravery when saving the baby's life? Or did Lady Geneva confide in her mother about the baby's paternity? If so, she must have also confessed in which manner Jamie came to her bed, as otherwise it would have had serious consequences for Jamie. What do you think about that? That's two listeners who had that idea. And, you know, I think it's definitely an unanswered question, at least by book 8. But I don't know. It's definitely interesting to think about.
I don't know. And I think that if we ever do get to talk to Diana again, we should ask her. oh, Lordy. What she yeah. thinks, because she knows. Part of me thinks no. If her mom didn't take the time to set her aside and tell her what to expect on her wedding night, I'm pretty sure that she didn't take the time to set her aside and tell her what she didn't do on her wedding night.
The only reason I think she may have is because, not thinking she might die, but in case something ever happened, because obviously, they, as we believe, they hadn't slept together. And so his, you know, his treatment of her turned on a dime when she started to show. So obviously there's this thing like, what the heck? So in case the question ever came up, you know, who's the father or what happened? Because she knew that he suspected something, and her mom may or may not have heard about anything of this nature. I would not be surprised if she said, even if she didn't say it was Jamie, I wouldn't be surprised if she said to her mom, look, mom, I did a little something, get it up ability with something. And that's what happened. So in case he ever says this, you know, this is why, or this is how. Now, I don't know any kind of like what she would have said, but it,
she
if she said,
would not have said get it up ability.
I agree. That's like a new word or something. I don't know. Martina P. continues, I can now understand how Hellwater was now more his prison than it ever had been before. Another child that he cannot claim, but at least with his decision to stay, he will be a small part of the child's life.
And that was chapter 15. Join us next time when we discuss chapter 16, entitled Willy. Oh, Willy.
So as we get ready or get, you know, get excited or whatever for the next one, the next chapter of our read along, we are absolutely, positively over the moon to announce that we have a new partner. And this partner is Zencastr. Zencastr is thebomb.com. So when Summer and I split the things, move the things, set up two separate pod studios, etc., which you've heard us talk about, we originally thought, okay, well, there may be times when we do things, maybe remotely, maybe we use Skype, maybe who knows, but we're going to use the TARDIS because that was what it was built for. And I can leave all the stuff over there. As we moved and started setting up the different places and got our computer set up and everything.
She didn't want to drive back over here.
It's not that it's a long, huge, long drive. It's just that, you know, my niece has to go to bed and I have to wait. And that's actually not even an issue. But it kind of was the driving. We came to see that it was just logistics. And we thought, well, let's try something. And I had heard about Zencastr, and there are some other services out there that are somewhat similar. And there are actually a decent number of options if you want to have this recording for multiple people at the same time and do it basically through the web and not have to use Skype. But you obviously need internet. So I started investigating it. I found Zencastr. I'm like, look, let's just try it. If it doesn't work out, you know, we'll go on to something else. There are a number of options. So we tried it and it worked. And we tried it again, and it worked. And long story short, we are just thrilled to be partnering with Zencastr and to be able to tell the world about this wonderful service. So Zencastr, we've used it, I think, pretty much since we moved apart. I think for every episode since. And as I said, we're in love with the service. Thank you so much to its creator for making this available. And check out the show notes. We have a special link for you if you'd like to check out a little bit more about Zencastr. And one more huge, huge thank you to the sponsor of this episode, Movement Watches. Again, you can get a hold of one of their amazing watches, 15% off with free shipping and free returns, by going to mvmtwatches.com/outlander. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/outlanderpod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/outlanderpod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.